I have an amazing artist we're going to talk to you next, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I'm in love with the shape of you.
Feels like summer.
Ready. Always makes me happy.
Yeah. It really is a great song.
It is so good.
You guys, it's the Spotlight on here at AfterBuzz TV, and I'm your host, James Lott Jr., and we bring you people we like to spotlight. And this light's going to be bright on this person. I'm so excited to talk to her. I just watched an amazing short film that she wrote, co-wrote, produced, co-starred in. It's called Pretext. It's so good. She's also starring in the indie horror film Psychopaths. It looks really interesting to you. The way it's shot, and I saw some of the trailer of that. It's really interesting. Also, some of you may know her from Grey's Anatomy. She had a really interesting scene. I'm going to show that on the show, too. She has all kinds of stuff going on. And she has comedy, drama. We're going to talk about it. She's doing it for herself. She is doing it for herself. Christina Elizabeth Smith.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. See? So good. Oh, claps.
Down, everybody. Down.
Yeah, please. Down. Sit down.
Down. How are you, girl?
I am so good. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, there's one. Okay, I was doing some research on you, and I wonder if this is true or not. Did you do some under five stuff for some soaps?
I did.
For like Days of Our Lives and Young and Restless?
I love soaps.
Oh, I do soap after shows here on AfterBuzz TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we do all of them, all four
of
them.
Yeah, I love soaps. I love working on them. The people are amazing. Yeah. I've made some really good friends on soaps.
Tell people. Aren't they some of the hardest working people in the business, the crew and cast?
They are. You have to understand, like, when you go into, like, a regular episodic, they're shooting, I don't know, at most, I want to say, 15 to 20 pages. Yeah. Like, and that's a heavy day.
Yeah.
Soaps will go through 70 pages in a day. They do, a lot of stuff is one take, and they're like, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
So the way that those artists work on those shows, and they absorb that script, and they go out and they do it, I just admire them so much. I think they're, way underrated.
I'm happy you say it, because we have a lot of stars today who came from soaps.
A lot.
I mean, that's especially like in New York. We had New York based soaps, and a lot of people who went there first when they went to theater and TV. Like, it was a great training ground for people, because you have to use your memory muscle heavily on soaps, don't you?
Yeah, and I think it's a great like workshop for actors. I mean, I'm really of the belief that actors should be working on the craft every single day. Anyway, you should be absorbing and absorbing. But imagine you're on a soap. And you have to absorb that many pages in a day, and then you go to a regular episodic. It's like, I got this.
Yes, I know.
I'm sure.
I did a movie recently. Actually, I'm not an actor, but I did a cameo in a movie. I had some lines.
Then you're an actor.
I guess so. But I had two pages. We did. We shot two pages in like half a day. Like it was so slow. But I was like, actors who do subs, they do more than this.
A lot.
I was like trying to remember my lines. I'm like, hello. My line was like, hi, I'm James. No. But I was like, it's crazy. I admire that so much.
Yeah, it's really admirable.
So I'm glad you said that you did that. If they offered you a soap role, would you be open to taking it?
I think it would be so fun.
I guess I could see you on a soap.
I would love it. And I would get to cry.
Yes.
And I would get to fight with somebody and hopefully break something.
let's get
a soap.
But is that fun? That's the thing about some of these episodic shows that go on all year long. You're able to play all those emotions.
Yeah.
Which actors want to do, right?
Yeah. And you get to work on your craft. It's a legitimate like test of your craft, and to see where you're at, I would love it.
I think you said that, because we're going to talk about many aspects of her career, and some of the things, of course, you go out for audition stuff, but you also create stuff of your own, too, because you have to be working on it, right? There's no excuse not, we talked about this before the show, to not work on it. Right?
No, there really isn't. I mean, in that mindset of like just sitting back and being like, when's the work going to come to me? Blaming it on my agent, blaming it on somebody else. It's that mindset really doesn't hold water anymore, because we have so many outlets with YouTube, with creating our own content, that it's just like, pick up something, write something, and go create
iPhone.
It. Just go create it. The resources are phenomenal.
That's true.
And once you build that momentum, I think you solidify more as an artist, and you get this excitement, and this thing grows inside of you of like, I have stories to tell inside of me, and someone maybe needs them. And that's your individual voice. And then when you cultivate that voice, you bring that to when you go to audition, you know your voice. It's stronger.
Oh, that's true. I guess, that's true.
So that's our job as artists. It's like, I can't just be a cookie cutter of what I think people want. I've got to like really know what I want and need to say.
Yeah.
So I have something to contribute.
Interesting. That's fair. That's really good, girl. You're on top of it. We're going to show something she did on Grey's Anatomy. Ooh, it's a big show. It's been like 11 years on the air.
No big deal.
And yes, it's some little Shondaland thing. But it's with Gina Davis, of all people, which I love Gina Davis.
Yeah.
So let's show that scene. You can
I don't want to leave anything up to chance.
What happened?
The pressure's dropped. She's in a lot of pain and she's cramping.
It hurts!
It's okay, Julie. We've got you.
She has invasive previa. She's scheduled for an ablation tomorrow.
I've been trying to get her pressure back up, but there is no fetal heart.
Damn. Where's her husband?
Your husband?
I'm bleeding.
Down me. Leave him out of here.
Robin, you're going to
get this baby out right here, right now.
Here?
We need a C-section tray set up in here. Paul Pied, get an incubator. Set.
Wait, what? I'm going to have the baby now?
Julie, I'm going to give you something to calm you down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I never calm had you down, girl.
I've seat on my own before. Okay?
I mean, not like this. You know what to do? The same three basic steps. Just like any other C-section. Open the abdomen, open the uterus, deliver.
Okay. Pressure steady at 100 over 60.
Okay, I can do
beta 9.
Okay.
Robin?
Just a fake belly and everything. All that stuff's all fake and they're going to cut into it or whatever.
Just come.
But they made it look real.
It does look real. It's so real.
It was real to me.
There's a real C-section on you on TV.
I'm very committed.
I got pregnant on purpose. And
guys,
I
waited the 9 months.
Yes, exactly. They came in.
Yep.
Exactly. No, it's okay. When you look at that, mm-hmm. you're basically, you're the center of the scene. Mm-hmm. With all these people around you. What is that like?
It's so interesting. I mean, I think at this point, of course, I'm used to it because you really have to just stay in your story,
okay.
especially with something that's that heightened, that's that emotional.
Yeah.
You have to deliver that emotion, you know, and you're in front of Gina Davis, so you don't want to fake it.
No, you don't.
Hey,
not at all.
Don't want to fake it. And I think I love that energy, though, that set energy. And I noticed on that set, too, there was such a respect for the artist of, like, leaving that space. And the director, it was sort of like a dance. I always notice that with really good directors. It's sort of like a dance. They don't really, like, pop that bubble around your creativity. They just come in and they sort of support it a little. And they come back out and they support it a little. So it was just such a beautiful environment. Gina Davis, everybody on that show was just amazing and so supportive. And they were like, you know, Gina Davis said to me, which was really amazing, she was like, that's a really hard thing to do, you know. So I'm like, okay, I have that in my little
self-esteem
backpack.
That's right. Thank you, Gina. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's, but I love that. I love being tested in that environment where you have all of these external things going on, but the story is still real to you.
Yeah.
And staying in that because that's the way, because there are mothers in the world that have gone through this.
Yeah.
And so in order to tell their story accurately, I have to stay in it and be committed to that.
Yeah, you have to be as authentic as you can. And that's the thing I was saying, because all these things are happening around you as an actor. You're having to stay centered in your performance because they have to do all their performances around you, but you got to be the center, one in the center, going, I got to still deliver the emotion as authentically as possible and not let Gina Davis or, I mean, I've got her name on the other side, or everybody working around you, you got to stay focused, right?
I mean, right. Without being a diva because ultimately you want to. I can still come out and talk to you as Christina.
Okay.
I don't need you to call me by my character name. I can still step out, but I can come right back to that story. It's like I had a really good mentor compare it to like just turning a dial on a radio, just turning to another station. I'm just going to go back to that, you know, Julie Hall was my character's name. I'm just going to go back to that Julie Hall station, you know, because you want to be collaborative. You want to be fun to work with on set because I want to make your job easier. You want to make mine easier. And then we have a really great day and we get some great footage.
I know. Now, I have to ask, because it's Shondaland. It must be a well-oiled machine, wasn't it? Was it a well-oiled machine there?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
The day it ran so smoothly. Everybody was amazing. It's just, it's huge. I mean, the production size is huge.
And you tell everybody in the world you're going to be on Grey's Anatomy? Because it's a huge show.
Yeah, it's a huge show.
I think if because she called me, I'd do whatever she told me. She's like, can you wash the floor
can you walk my dog? Yeah.
Yes,
girl.
I'll do whatever you want. I'm like, I'm just saying, it's a Shondaland production.
Yeah.
Like, that's what she's doing these days with the catch and this and how you're
like,
murder.
Okay.
I'll do whatever you want, girl. Whatever you say, I'll do whatever you want. So that's, congratulations to you. That was a good performance, but just
thank
you. Congratulations to you. That's a big one. Another one I want to show you guys. Okay, so it's only a small clip. I was going to tell you just a parental advisory, please. It's not for any graphic, you know, scenes, but just there's some adult language. We're going to play a small clip of this next thing called Pretext that you did. Mm-hmm. And at first, as we set that up, with Pretext, where did that come from?
That's funny. That came from, long story short, came from a conversation that I had with my very good friend and co-producer on this.
Yes.
He's my favorite co-creator right now, Jeremy Raiden. We were just having a conversation one evening, and I was telling him about a real thing that exists called pretext calling in rape investigations. This is in the
rape. I never knew that.
Yeah, and that was the reaction that I got from Jeremy. I was explaining, like, there is a process that victims go through where they're taken into a room with a detective, and they are asked to call the person that allegedly raped them and act like they enjoyed what happened to get that person to admit anything. And the detective is on the call, yeah, kind of writing on a notepad what to say it, how to act. And it's really traumatizing for the victim to hear that person's voice and then also act like they enjoyed what happened. So that is where, when I explained it to Jeremy, his reaction was the same. I've never heard of this thing.
Me neither.
And it is illegal in some states. It's not in California. Okay. And so we kind of wanted to just shine a light on this thing.
It's funny because, you know, it's a short. You guys, I was making sure it's a short. It's a short film. It was about 6 minutes long. Mm-hmm. For me, because I am a survivor of rape, mm-hmm, of a violent act and rape. So, and I've talked about this a few times on some of my other shows. It's not a secret for everybody, but if you guys don't know, I am a survivor of that. And I didn't get to, my attacker died shortly thereafter.
Wow.
So I get a chance to bring him to justice or have to do, I mean, that stuff. So for me, I've always wondered what it would be like if I had a chance to have, if I had brought him to justice. I've had years of therapy and I've worked a lot of stuff out. And if you're lucky, you can put it back, you can find a place for it in your life, in your past, with people who go through this kind of stuff. But when I watched this film, it was just like, I was thinking, I put myself in a situation like, could I have done this? And your reaction, I mean, just brilliant performance. I mean, like, I saw like a baby afterwards. And Jeremy was right there with you. I mean, the performances were just like right on top of each other. But I was thinking, you wrote this and you're acting it. It's like, so first with the script, how did you write the script? I mean, like, did you go and listen to tapes? Okay. Did you actually listen to tapes and stuff?
This kind of comes from talking to people personally.
Okay.
And so the script Jeremy and I wrote in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
We sat down and wrote it, just understanding that struggle and what we really wanted to hit, because another thing we didn't want to do is demonize the detective.
We really wanted
to highlight the system is the problem. That's why we added the clip of him later on at home. We didn't want to make him look like the bad guy. We wanted to just show this system doesn't serve. Because a lot of times it's exactly what you said. I don't know how I could do that. Because what happens is they go through this process of the forensics. And
yes.
they go through the process of the pretext call. And then at a certain point they're like, I can't. I just need to survive.
Yeah.
Like, I need to. I'm being re-victimized and treated like a criminal and all of these things. I just need to start picking myself back up, or I'm not going to make it. And so they dropped the case.
Well, that was my deal. I mean, it's documented, but my deal was that I was left for dead. I was at knife point. I was beat up, the whole thing. And so when I went to the hospital, it actually happened in the hospital I worked in. It was mm-hmm. it was a coworker. And I was a nurse. And when I got in the hospital and then the police came, I couldn't go as far as name him and go any further. Because mm-hmm. I had, at that point, you said it perfectly, I had to take care of myself for a second.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I told people, if you could tell who your attacker is, you should tell him. If you can't, you get the strength to do it. But for me, it was just like, I got to figure this out for a second. Because I'm beat up and I've been raped and all this. It's just trauma just really happened to me. And it was like, I need to figure out how I could actually walk the next second, the next hour, like breathe.
Your it was one of those things. Yeah.
So when you said that, I was like, that's exactly what it feels like. Just like, I just collect myself. So even imagining this pretext thing, I was like, And I just want to say, because I don't give it away too much, but at the end, there's a scene with the detective she's talking about that will kind of explain, it's just so many things going on in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like, oh my, it's such great acting, great cinematography in that scene.
Michael Street, yeah, he was our cinematographer. He's phenomenal.
So yeah, when you see towards the end, and that made me cry too. So let's show again. So there's a couple of a little bit of pieces of rough language, not too heavy rough language, but a few pieces of the show. That clip.
Touching myself. Tell me what happened.
You had a lot of fun.
I'm wet right now, just thinking about it. I wish that you were here.
I'm gonna need you to get a hold of yourself and call him back.
I can't do this.
I need you to call him
back. This guy knows me. He knows I don't talk like that.
Well, you gotta sell it.
He's just sitting at home right now. He's just sitting at home thinking that nothing's wrong. You guys put me in the back of a cop car. You booked and prodded. You put a camera on my fucking vagina.
So that's what like. This is a short film.
Like, so
I
wish you that piece.
No,
so powerful.
I want
Thank you.
You did such a great job.
Thank you so much.
But you did such a great job. It's so real. It's like. I mean, I know it's acting, and I know you're acting it. But it was like that's kind of probably I would feel probably the same way, and many people out there would probably be like, I can't, I don't talk that way. I'm like, I didn't. I mean, I'm like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to be like, I'm trying to help you.
I got to do my job. You're just a number. I got to do my job. Yeah, they have to separate. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that the craziness of grappling with what is this thing I'm doing, and he's in my ear, and he's just sitting at home, and I'm in an interrogation room, and I'm
When you said that too, that was like, when you go, he's at home thinking nothing's wrong.
Yeah, he's just chilling at home,
probably
watching TV, Netflix.
But that
is the truth, and I think there's too much of that, like glossing over, like we watch all these procedural shows, and it's just like the girl is crying, she gets a blanket, then they go and arrest the guy, they go to court, she cries some more, he goes to prison. And I just really want to shine the light on that is not what happens.
Yeah, that's like, it's just, good job, girl. I'm like, I mean, I can tell there's more talent in there. But this is it's what you guys are creating together. I want to see more from
Thank
you guys.
You.
I
Thank
mean, it's just
you.
Such. So it's like about 6 minutes, 39, like 6 minutes long. It's just, it's amazing. Called Pretext. It's amazing. Another odd film that's kind of that you're doing. It's like a thriller thing, indie horror thriller mm-hmm. called Psychopaths.
Yes.
We're gonna show a little piece of the clip, and it's the lead actress who's in there. I forgot her name. The lead actress.
Is it Ashley Bell?
I think it is. You can take a look up there. We're going to show that clip. We'll show a little bit of that clip. Let's see there.
Can't be arranged.
This is when the cop comes to talk to her. There's somebody down there.
Is there something I can do for you?
Well, like I said, had a pretty bad accident. A turnoff on the floor.
Yes, you said that already.
I did. I'm sorry. You know, this night just got me really flustered.
The way it's shot, everything, her hair, I just think it's so interesting.
The lunatic asylum.
The lunatic asylum. That's right. Van that turned
over.
It's so stylized. Very psychedelic and everything.
Dangerous folks. One of them attacked the driver.
So I just want to show a bit of that because it's a longer clip. Trailer. But I want to show that just like, it's so stylized. I wrote stylized, psychedelic, Mickey Keating.
He's the.
We did Darling, which I remember Darling. I've seen Darling.
He did Carnage Park as well. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's so phenomenal. Like getting these like stylized, unique approach to horror. Yeah.
I know.
That makes it interesting and fascinating. And shooting with him is so fun. I met him on another project with Alan Ruck that was directed Mike Williamson. Alan Ruck was my father, and that was another horror project. And Mickey Keating actually played my brother.
Oh.
Yeah, it was so fun, but I met him on that, and then he brought me on for Psychopaths, which was so fun.
Well, Mickey called it. He wanted to do chaos and glamour.
Oh.
And if you look at that clip a little bit, it's both. She's kind of glamorous looking.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, there's chaos going on.
That makes sense, because I don't... Well, it's somewhat out now,
yes.
So I think I can reveal, like, I was very glamorous, but
okay.
I was also a super party
okay.
girl that goes kind of crazy pants.
Ooh.
So, hey. So that fits with the theme.
Yeah. Those were his words. He said, I looked it up. His words, I wanted to create chaos and glamour.
Well, he worked it out.
He did. And I was like, I watched the whole trailer. You can go on YouTube, the whole trailer's there. It's very, I mean, and this cop is just tied, and you see the lights behind, I mean, everything, the way it was shot was just so...
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's brilliant, and the nicest guy.
It's like, where's this stuff come from, then? He's a nice guy. It was weird. Mm-hmm. Yep. Some of us nice guys, we are kind of weird inside.
Yeah, we all have that though.
We all have a little side in there, but yeah, I mean it starts Ashley Bell, and it was at Tribeca recently, so yes. Film festival. So that's kind of good. It's getting around the festival. So, you know, people, I want to tell you, getting to a festival is not easy. Just what you know, there's a whole circuit, and hundreds of thousands of films are submitted to all these festivals. Mm-hmm. So to get in one, that's really good.
Yeah, it's exciting. Tribeca too. That's a top one.
Like it's tough. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I'm saying people, when people get into like that's they did some really doesn't work. I mean, it's amazing. So yeah, so it's called Psychopaths, and that's out now. But he did Darling and Pod. I know those two. So
yeah,
for sure. And he's really good.
He's busy.
He is busy. Now, one of the things I want to talk to you about, we're going to go on to switch gears now.
Okay.
And because she's really funny and really fun. And we're going to do some kind of, she's been on some series and stuff. We're going to show her comedy reel, a little bit of her comedy reel. You can look up there and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
This is like one of those found footage movies where like anyone can make it.
Okay. Not just anyone can make a found footage movie. You have to have a killer concept, realistic actors. What are you doing?
I am making a found footage movie.
I just downloaded
this part's funny. It's coming up.
Now all I need is a kitchen cupboard to open on its own.
So silly.
I don't know.
A sight gag made me laugh.
Just don't pay attention.
Oh, this is funny too.
Should we tell her? I think she's ready. We rub bacon on ourselves.
Like that sounds good to me.
Yep.
Oh, this is.
Slap me in the face! Are those otters holding hands?
You're a total bro.
What are you guys looking at?
Looking at cute things.
Are you afraid that the Bloods think you soft? TT, can you go to the jungles anymore to see your baby mamas? So some of the penis skin would then come out of the anus.
So we say it's not safe to do the surgery. And nobody wants a big pussy.
Right.
Like a mask.
I like it. It's really educational. It's teaching me everything I need to know.
About what?
About how to deal with this feral man that I captured.
Holy crap! How long has he been here?
He is a foul beast. Fetch me a bucket so I can clean him.
Actually looks at the camera and like, what? Hilarious stuff.
Oh, thank you.
The bacon thing made me laugh. So I was like, yeah, something from your bacon, I can go there too. I mean, so you are a really good comedian.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Because, I mean, they always say that, you know, drama is easy, comedy is, you know, is hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so where do you think you have the comedy, you have the timing? Where do you think you got it from?
Well, I did train.
You did train. Okay.
I have trained with the Groundlings, the UCB, and Iowa West.
Oh, that's right. You did, yes.
Yeah, so I've definitely trained. I grew up in a funny family, too. I just grew up around ridiculous people. Just around some silly people that didn't take ourselves, we just did not take ourselves very seriously.
Yes.
So it was always a really good balance because I feel like I have those stories like pretext inside of me, and you got to balance it out with something or you're going to crawl into a hole.
Yes.
So I always had that side, and I was like, okay, I need to – this will teach me a lot. Like, you know, so I wanted to nurture it, and that's where I went to all the – I mean, L.A. has the best comedy schools in the world. So as soon as I moved out here, I was like, okay, this is a track that I want to go down and just have that muscle, you know?
We have some people who, some other hosts here who do things with Iowa West all the time. And, of course, UCB, of course, is like, I mean, legendary.
Huge,
it's huge and legendary. What are some things you really got out of those experiences that you carry with you in your career?
Trusting my instincts, I think, would be the biggest one. I think there is not a lot of time to get in your head and get all wrapped around an idea. You can't chew on it that much in improv. Mm. You just have to do.
Yes, and.
Do.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
So the more I do it, the more I trust those instincts, and it gets into my body, and I'm like, okay, there's a part of me that has something to say that I just need to listen to it and jump. And again, it's about – I think that transfers over into all aspects of my life of, like, just jumping in, just trying and jumping in and not being afraid to look dumb, not being afraid to put yourself out there, and just – being exposed in that way, especially like as an artist, you have to be willing to be exposed in order to be a great artist. And so improv has taught me so much about
I mean, it's one of those things, because I look at actors, and actors, to me, in my estimation of what actors are, you're supposed to be nomadic creatures, where you go from part to part to part to part. If you're lucky, right, you play all these roles. You want to play as many roles as you can in your life. But yeah, sometimes you get shows, and of course you take those they take those jobs, yeah. and they last 4 or 5, 6 years. Yes,
no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. But I mean, but I guess I would say that the true nature is that you really want to play as many different roles as you can. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure improv probably loosens you up to like just to acting in general, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you get to and you see what works for you, and you have a lot of great mentors to kind of give you that feedback to. You're like, oh, that fits on you. That's a good like comedy color, or oh no, that. You know, I was doing improv when I was really young, so it was like, oh no, that's an ugly color on you. That's a bad color. So, you know, it kind of just shows you, and it kind of shows you what makes you really excited, yeah. what makes you laugh. Because if it makes you laugh, it's going to make other people laugh. Yeah, but right. if you're trying to be funny, it's going to just feel forced. So if you can, that's all the greatest people always told me, just make yourself laugh, because people want to see other people having fun.
Yes, that's true.
It's the same with you see someone at a party and you're like, wow, they have so much charisma. It's like, yeah, because they're just having fun.
Yeah, it's so true.
They're just, they have that energy and they're just there and enjoying themselves and they're not overthinking what everybody's thinking about them. And I think that's what great artists do as well.
That's true. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's one of those things where people like, it's infectious. People like to, when you start to laugh, then people start to laugh sometimes. They don't even know why they're laughing. But they're like, oh, okay, sure, because you're laughing, I'll laugh too. And it's almost, I think it would be infectious that you're up there, especially when you're doing your improv, you're making choices, like I said, trusting just doing it, making choices that you think might be funny, other folks would join in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's kind of like, I would say make them come to you. Like, just you just do your thing and they'll come to you.
Be a tree that has roots and the little nature creatures will come to you. Little squirrels and stuff. They'll come and get their fruit.
No, that makes sense to me. I mean, I'm going to take an improv class, but I've never done it.
Do it.
And I hear it's like it changes your life.
Oh, you'll love it. You especially. Yeah, you're all charisma. You're like a ball of charisma. So do it.
Everybody can tell me, you haven't done one yet. I just haven't done one yet. And I feel like it would change my life, too. I feel like it will change my life.
And you will love it. And you'll meet fun people. And you'll get to go to shows because they make you. And it's an amazing community that's putting out a lot of amazing things.
They are.
They really are.
Everywhere. I mean, everywhere. We're talking podcasts, web, TV, movies. I mean, everywhere. The tentacles are everywhere. One thing I do want to ask, because I haven't had a chance to ask anybody this, are there fundamental differences between Groundlings, UCB?
Yeah, I would say there's fundamental differences between Groundlings, UCB, and IO.
Okay.
And I always kind of sum it up as, like, Groundlings is very character-based, like SNL character-based. Like, if you want to find your 5 characters that you play over and over and over. You know, that then you go to the Groundlings and you work and cultivate those characters and you
what all your sketch work is all about.
Those characters, because it's to develop script, like sketch. That's originally like what it was for. So then you like write those characters into sketch and it goes from there and you have those core, 5 and then that grows from there.
Yeah.
So it's very individual character. What are my 5 characters? Okay. And then I like UCB is very like game, very much that the game of the scene, which to kind of explain that sort of like the joke in the scene, sort of like the rule of threes. If you know anything about like
that sounds
playing
good.
In comedy,
it sounds kind of
you sort of like you find a joke.
You say 2 things that are normal that go together. The third thing is something totally outrageous.
Breaks the rules. Yeah, it breaks the rule of that game that you've set up. So UCB is very like that kind of finding the game of the scene, and then whereas like IO, because IO I was at the longest as far as I did there in. Entirety of their program. IO is very much relationship based. Like, what's our relationship? What's the funny idiosyncrasies of that relationship? And how do we react off of each other? That's so funny. Like, you can, imagine your parents and the little things that they pick at each other for. And, you develop that relationship within that scene, and you develop it and you take those relationships in different scenarios. So that's like my way that I always describe it when people are like, where should I go?
Right, where should you go? Okay, makes sense. It's very clear. You made it sound really clear, yes.
Hey, thanks.
One's like that. You should be a spokesperson. But my favorite threes, of course, is it was from Austin Powers. It was like one of those things like, I can't stand the intolerance, racism, and the Dutch.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the perfect example. Excuse me?
Yeah, it's like, what? I mean, I love that kind of comedy. But the real deal. But yeah, but I always with sketches, to me that's a whole other animal, of course. I admire anybody who can do sketches. But I guess you really develop as a writer then. Mm-hmm. You really at the ground, you're really developing as that type of writer.
Yeah, and how to be funny in writing, which I think is another completely different beast. You know, I think when you're first laying something out on paper, you can take it in. You have people, and again, I have less experience with that, but yeah. You have, you know, you can write it down on paper and you're like, this is funny to my weird brain. And then you take it to people and you take it to people and they're like, it's not funny at all. And then you kind of have to, that's where I think you have to work with the artist that you're working with. And that's where the improv comes in. Is like, okay, you're funny as an artist in this way. How can I incorporate that into my sketch? And it sort of becomes this like evolving thing with the artist that you're working with.
Does it also make you more present in your work?
For sure.
Because, I mean, as an actor, you have to be present in every scene with your scene partner. Hopefully, they're giving you, you're giving, hopefully you're receiving and doing. So, I guess with improv, especially, you have to really be present.
Yeah, it makes you listen. I think it makes you listen more as a human being. I think we're constantly, as an improviser, I cannot be thinking about right now what I'm going to say next. Because then I won't hear what you're saying. Yeah. Because an improv, it should only be growing off what you said last. I shouldn't be planning all these scenarios of like, I'm going to act like I'm going to my fake garden and planting all these fake things. It's like, because you're saying all these things that I'm completely missing, and then all the jokes are lost. And then it's just a weird conversation of all these weird things being added. So I think acting teaches you how to listen.
Yeah. Because there's a such thing as active listening,
yeah,
and passive listening. Yeah. There's such thing.
We know a lot of passive listeners.
I know half of them are my family. they're busy talking. You know who you are. I love you guys. But even for myself, I had to learn how to actively listen over the years. Like, okay, there's a way to actually hear something, not just think you heard it or half hear something. But you have to hear things all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like good to like listen. And in acting, especially, yeah, you got to play off that person and be there with them and hear the words coming out of their mouth. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, you can say your words too, but also to show your emotion you're supposed to show, I'm sure.
Yeah, right? And they'll give you so much of what you need. Yeah, I don't think it has to be that much work. I mean, you need to train the muscle, yeah. But once that muscle is there, it doesn't have to be that much work, because if you're present with another human being, just as I am with you, Christina is with James, then you're just responding. I'm just listening, and I'm present with you under the circumstances I've set up as my character. I know where my character comes from. I know how they feel and how they look at the world. So I'm going to respond through that to you as a human.
When you get roles, do you, if you don't get a backstory, do you create one yourself?
I think it's my job. I don't need to create all this crazy stuff and go in my house and create barriers and get all crazy pants. But it is my job to grow those roots. Oh, my chapstick's
right. Hey, you got chapstick.
Chapstick.
It kind of matches. It's yellow.
Yeah. It is my job to, you know, plant and fertilize those roots. Makes so sense. That there's gravity there, you know? So I do sit with it. I see what the script has everything you need. So I go to the script as much as I possibly can, and I just sit with it. And I think about the circumstances. And if my mother's mentioned, I think about her.
Interesting.
Yeah, and what it was like to be a child with her. And I just really, I love that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I love that. Yeah. Because the imagination has everything. I kind of read a script the way I read novels.
Interesting. Okay.
That world is alive to me, and I can see it, and it's, you know, it's visceral. And once you get into that visceral place, you don't forget lines, because it's...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like if you were going back and you were explaining a novel that you really loved to somebody, you wouldn't forget, because it's a visceral experience. That's true. If you approach a script that same way, it's alive, and it has life.
You're right. I like the analogy. It's like, or if I go to a concert, or I see a good movie or anything, you start remembering the little lines and that scene. And so, like what I just did with you in pretext, I was telling all these scenes I was saying before the show came on. You're right. So I guess acting, it would be the same thing.
There was someone great that I wish I could remember that said we would all be more brilliant artists if we would just read scripts the way that we read novels. And that's why a lot of times when people ask me, they're like, what should I do if I'm just starting out as an actor? I'm just like, read a lot of books. Like, train your brain to step into other stories, to empathize with other stories, to expand beyond, like, what's my Christina life and all the Christina stuff I have to do? Like, because you can become so much bigger.
For you, do you have to like your characters you play? No matter what the character is. I mean, it could be anything.
I can't judge them.
Okay.
I can't judge them. I have to understand where they're coming from.
Okay.
if I externally am like, this person is not a good person, I'm in trouble. Like, even if I was playing a serial killer, okay, you have to understand where that person is coming from, what that motivation is, and step inside the skin. You have to be in the skin. And that's the only way that I can justifiably play their story and tell their story in order to justify the script.
Okay.
So liking is a very, I feel like that's a removed thing. Okay, that's an external removed looking.
Okay.
Outside, I have to understand my mission in that story.
God, if that makes sense. No, it totally makes sense. You're saying, you know, you want to understand them so you can make it more real for yourself to play. You don't necessarily have to like them or dislike them. I'm playing a character. Yeah, this character's a serial killer. But I'm playing this person as a human, so I got to make sure I figure out what's
Yeah, they are human, and I think that really, you know, it's not like I'm going to play a serial killer and then be like, oh, serial killers are my buddies.
Right. Yeah,
that's
exactly
not how it works, but understanding the circumstances to justify the story is my job.
Actors, that's a lot of work. And I think it's fun. I know it's fun because you get to pretend and play, but just young people tell me that's not work. It really is work. I mean,
it has to be work. If you're not doing it right, to be
a good actor. We know some folks who are a little lazy out there, but we'll do that today.
Yeah.
But to be a decent actor, you have to know what you're doing and actually put some effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been acting?
I have been acting for 13 years. Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so you think you can continue doing it? No, I'm just kidding. You're still going to do it? No.
Yep. Jig's up at this point. This is it.
I just wasn't going to do it for a while. So what is some advice someone's given you, maybe it could be outside the business, in the business, just in general, about navigating this unbelievably unstable, crazy, sometimes rewarding, wonderful, life-changing business?
Woo! For me, I think is finding my I must.
Ooh, I like that.
To kind of explain that, I had a mentor that made me read Rilke, Letters to a Young Poet.
Wow.
She made me read it the first chapter every single day for while I was with her, which was 3 years.
Wow.
And it was sort of a meditative, Rilke talks a lot about sitting in the I must, that need to be an artist, no matter the external sort of accolades, no matter what happens, what does that look like? And if you cannot commit on that level, don't do it.
Makes sense.
And if you meditate, I meditated on that for so long and really thought about what that meant for me, and that kind of planted me and grew this authenticity in me that solidified my I must. I have to do this thing. And so when I get a little lost and I'm like, I don't know where this is going to go, and I don't know where I sit, I kind of go back to that just simple thing of I must. There is no other option.
That's, it's interesting you said, because I took a 2-month sabbatical earlier this year, and I needed to just kind of reground, regroup, and decide what I wanted. But I came back, and through the process, I realized I must do what I'm doing in this business. I mean, being a host and a producer and writer. It's like, I must, now I would say it now, I must do it. And now my purpose is so strong.
Yeah, and that sense of purpose won't waver. It's unshakable. And once you become unshakable, there's no amount of rejection or negative people or anything.
Haters on Twitter. Anything. You know how that goes.
Yeah, there's none of that that can stop you, because you have the I must rooted and you just move forward with that. And you know you're a storyteller and a creator and you bring that into the world.
I would say you made a good point too about the whole external stuff, because you have to I tell people all the time, you got to find your purpose, and you have to be willing to do it no matter what's going on. And a lot of things can happen. I mean, you could have your rent issues this month, and so-and-so's dog is bothering you. I mean, anything be going on. But you have to be saying, okay, no matter what's going on, this is still my passion, this is still what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And go down that lane and stay in that lane, I'm sure. And that's how I feel now. I got the sense of now what I want to do, and now I'm going
to
do it.
Yeah, and you're coming to it for yourself.
Yes.
And because you believe you have something to give. And we need that. You know, we need that. And that's
because we can't affect change in the world. Like I said, your pretext is number one that we can affect change. Like, we can't do stuff that actually helps us along, but at the same time help others.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the ultimate goal for me. It's like, as a storyteller, if I can reach out and affect or touch somebody else, then I'm like, holy grail, you know?
Writing. So what is your process when it comes to writing? Like, how's that
using I am you? Now exploring, because I have some great, phenomenal friends that are brilliant writers. They're really pushing me towards the outlining thing. I'm a free writer. I just, like, sit down, and I feel like I'm very visual, so I see the story, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to write it. but they're very much like, no, you kind of need an outline. but I'm the wild lady in the field that just wants to rewrite it.
Yeah,
So I'm, like, exploring the idea of, you know, getting more structured and outlining. But my process thus far has just been to write it, see it in my head, and kind of sit with it and sit with it and sit with it and think about it and sit with it and then just write it out.
That makes sense. It's like you purge it out. You have the feeling. You purge it out. So you can edit
you
massage.
You have to. I mean, it's going to get edited 100 times.
Yeah, 8 million times.
And then you're like, this is not the story I thought I originally wrote. This looks totally different, but that's a process.
Right.
And then sometimes you'll write down something you didn't even realize you wrote down, and that's the golden egg. And then you were like, oh, that's the little nugget I got to chase.
You know? That's true too. But I mean, you've basically diversified yourself. You have so many different things you can do. You can produce, you can write, you can act. I mean, that's in this business, you got to be a hyphenate most of the time.
I think so. And it makes me I think a better person to work with because I empathize. I'm like, I know what you're dealing with. I know what you're dealing with, you know, because I know how difficult and how much it takes. And so I honor writers more. I'm like, I want to justify every word that you put into this because I know the work that went into this to get the script where it is right now. So I want to do it justice. And I want to honor every word you put here and not forget any of them, you know. Yeah. So it makes me honor the writer more. It makes me honor the producer more. Like, you just have more respect.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Promenade?
The movie I did?
Yes, you did.
Oh, that was so many years ago.
Yeah, so we got to bring it up. Bring it back a little bit.
Bringing it back.
Yes, that's right, girl.
That was so fun. I worked with this... that was the group of brothers that directed that. The Holmes brothers.
Yeah.
I met my second month in L.A.
Oh, wow.
They hired me for a web series they were doing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and then they kept bringing me back on for projects, and Promenade was one of them.
That's good.
It was like a sweet movie about these two teenagers.
Yeah, romantic comedy. Daryl Holmes.
Yeah, they're great. I'm still friends with them now.
See,
they're
amazing.
They're like family. They're my L.A. family. I love them. Yeah, it was a very fun process. I got to just... You know, I grew up on those, like, amazing teenager movies, and I was like, I want to be in one of those so badly. And this was my opportunity to, like, really explore that. And he gave us so much. Like, talk about a really – he wrote that as well. Like, talk about a flexible director and, like, bringing in improv. And he would, like, ask us to improv and just go for a long time and tape it all.
Wow.
He would just tape all of it. And absorb all of it, and a lot of it would end up in the final project.
Great.
Yeah, so he has always been like that to work with. I still have a project that I did maybe last year that's their new movie that is going to be coming out at some point, but they haven't finished it. It's still in post. So I've worked with them now for years and years. Love them.
It must be nice to work with people that you know, and they know you. They know you can deliver. It must be just a nice... I mean, you still have work to do and you got things to do, but it must be supposed to be a nice feeling that takes some of the stress off. That you're like, oh, with my buddies again, and we're gonna, and I know how they direct, or I know how they write, and they know how I act, and it's kind of works.
Yeah, and then when they're creating other projects, they'll kind of write that in, or they'll incorporate that in with little bits of your essence, or they'll be like, I know this about Christina and one of her hobbies, so I will like bring that into this next script. Yeah, so it just becomes this collaborative sort of thing. It's so fun.
You're amazing. I want to see more. I want to see more from you.
Thank you.
I really do. I want to see more from you. Of course, hire her. She's an actress for hire. But I really want to see what else you come up with writing-wise. Well, I want to see some more. I want to see some more short films from you. You're just and Jeremy. You guys are really good. You're off to a good start.
We love creating, so that's the goal. Put out more and more.
Yeah, about that content. But folks, it's some good stuff. And so Psychopath is out now, doing the film festival circuit. Pretext is out now too. I saw it on YouTube.
Yeah, you can watch it right now. Yeah. We are submitting it to film festivals as well, but we really just want to get it to whoever it can. Affect.
And, okay, so folks, tell them in that camera over there where they can find you on social media if they want to talk to you.
Hi, guys. Yeah, please follow me on Twitter. My handle is @IMC_E_S.
Yes.
And then on Instagram, I'm on Instagram probably the most. My handle is just @ChristinaElizabethSmith.
Very good. Mm-hmm. You can follow us at AfterBuzz TV. It's called Spotlight On. This interview will be on there also. And you can follow us on iTunes under Spotlight On. It will be on there for audio if you want to just download it and listen to our voices talk
to you.
Yeah, just
our sweet voices.
Exactly. In the car while you're driving, especially here in LA traffic. You can listen to us while you're trying to go through the 405 or the 110 or 170 or 134 or 91 or 90. Yeah, all those crazy freeways. 60. They're all crazy. and you can follow me at James Lott Jr. where all James Lott Jr.'s are. You can just go online, type my name in. I am on every social media platform. Seriously, we've got my form. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Don't sit up, just come out your brain.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.